are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, November 21st, 2017. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Charlie Rose, Glenn Thrush, Representative John Conyers, all facing harassment allegations. Meanwhile, the DOJ sues to block the AT&T Time Warner merger. The Trump administration looking to remove temporary protected status for Haitians here in the wake of the 2010 earthquake that devastated their country. Meanwhile, Secretary of State Tillerson accused by the State Department of breaking child soldier laws. And the announcement came today. The FCC plans a total reversal of net neutrality. Meanwhile, the biggest story, the Trump administration still continues to be the judiciary. And it's reported that Puerto Rican Hurricane Maria casualties are 9 times higher than believed. Trump's census pick also looks to be a disaster, this one man-made. House GOP tax deal appears to be $1.3 trillion short of revenue neutral. Republicans now talking about avoiding a reconciliation conference. And National Security Advisor McMaster apparently says Donald Trump is an idiot.
And more.
All this and more on today's program. A couple of housekeeping notes, very quick, ladies and gentlemen. Tomorrow on the program, we will have a new interview for you about the family that has made billions of dollars on wreaking havoc across the country with opioids. And then on Friday, I had, this is obviously a pre-recorded interview, with, I can't even remember his first name, Hoagland.
William Hoagland.
William Hoagland. Very nice guy. And also fascinating story about America's first war, I guess, after the Revolutionary War. And here's a spoiler alert. We lost. That's why there's no name.
It's one of my favorite books of the year.
Yeah. I said, I got to say, this was, I think people will pick up on it, but I sort of like felt during the interview, I understood history for the first time. The
was
concept
like
of history.
Was it a politically correct war?
Was it a
political? That way we lost?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There were too many liberals out there who were not
like being real.
Who allowed only the right wingers to fill the vacuum of. I dubbed that war, though, the Mulligan.
I call it the Cuck War of 18, whenever it was.
Well, okay.
You want to call
yours
it the Mulligan?
Yours is not as sophisticated.
Not as sophisticated as a golf joke.
Okay. And the. One other note I wanted to make, and I'm not going to spend any time on it today. You can look for my Twitter feed to get more information on this. But a woman, her name escapes me at the moment, Elaine Fleischman. She was a whistleblower, an attorney, who blew the whistle to the U.S. government in... blew the whistle on J.P. Morgan Chase. It led to a $9 billion settlement that J.P. Morgan had to pay. She was the subject of a Matt Taibbi article in Rolling Stone magazine some time back. I think we actually interviewed Taibbi about that piece. She's Canadian. Maybe actually I interviewed her. I can't quite remember, to be honest with you, at this point. But she has apparently taken upon herself as an attorney to investigate the claims that Matt Taibbi sexually harassed or assaulted women at his time working in Russia for the Exile magazine, running the Exile magazine. Same too of his time at the Racket. I don't know actually if she dealt with Ames's, the charges against Ames in any way. All the questions seem to be asked about Taibbi. She interviewed 12 of 16 employees who were working at the Exile. She could not reach the other four because none of those 12 had information about this. Each one of those 12 people working in that office answered questions as to if there was sexual assault, sexual harassment, or if some of the passages were fictional in the book. To a person, each of those 12 people said there was no sexual assault, no sexual harassment, passages were fictional in the book. Some have made public statements, others no. You can find all that information in the tweet. She did a rather comprehensive look at this. She also printed some DMs from Mike Cernovich to Taibbi, basically saying, you're about to find out what it's like to be a conservative. I don't know. I didn't dig into that stuff. I'm less interested in that. But you can go find this. It's a draft letter. It's rather extensive, but there is a fairly helpful grid on this. This is not in any way addressing his misogynistic writings from that time or since that time. But, you know, at the time that this happened, I found it a little problematic that there were no actual accusers. And frankly, the thing that's also sort of amazing about this is that there doesn't seem to have been a single reporter who followed up on this in any way. Now, perhaps they're still working on it. The stories that came out about Charlie Rose have been in the works for years. But with that said, at least these 12 people, 12 of the 16, and two of whom were referenced in the book.
Did she ask them about Mark Ames as well?
I don't know.
Because
I don't know.
He's the one who talks about actually doing bad stuff in the book. Taibbi just kind of laughed or whatever.
Right. Well, that was my point. I mean, according to what the book was as well. Now, I don't know. I don't know if what happened with Ames, and all these questions seem to be specific as to Taibbi. Ranging from, have you ever seen Taibbi sexually assault someone? Have you ever been the subject of sexual assault by Taibbi? Have you ever seen Taibbi sexually harass someone? Have you ever been the subject of sexual harassment by Taibbi? Have you ever seen Matt Taibbi stand by and do nothing while the sexual assault or sexual harassment took place? And on those questions, like I say, the answer was unanimously no. And then she went on to do this at the Exile. So at the Racket. I don't know. I haven't, like I say, this is quite long. I haven't read all the stuff, and I don't know that she investigated anything about Ames. But In terms of Taibbi, that is the, you know, that is what that report has found. And, you know, I think people can hold Matt Taibbi to account in terms of his misogynistic writings. I would imagine that we're going to have him on in the future. And, I think he's quite made it clear that he regrets a lot of the way that he has written stuff. So that is that. And people, like I say, can go to my Twitter account. I retweeted at one point. I don't know if Taibbi did. I think he may have. That's maybe where I found it. You can find a link. You can find a link there. Before we get into the FCC and the AT&T suit and John Conyers, well, I guess maybe we should just talk about Conyers to the extent that we're going to. Apparently, there has been some stories recently that the House and the Senate... Oh, I also wanted to say we have a live audience today. Somehow I got you sandwiched into two stories of...
Thanks for being here, guys. Anyways, Charlie Rose.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, it's great.
John Charlie
Conyers
Rose.
Did what? You're going to forget Charlie Rose?
Well,
I
think the fact is that there's going to be more of these. Jeffrey Tambor, Charlie Rose, Glenn Thrush. Charlie Rose has not been personally...
I just can't believe the Glenn Thrush one, you know? He's just so attractive.
Personally, Charlie Rose has not been personally significant for me since probably for over a decade. There was a time when I was completely obsessed with him. I nearly ruined his career in the early 90s. In the late 90s.
Why didn't you finish the job? You could have protected a lot of women. Sam.
I tried. I wanted him to appear in my movie, A Bad Situationist, which I'm quite convinced would have... he probably would have paid me at the time to not finish.
Destroyed him. That'd be great.
It was, but he rejected my offer of coming onto the set at that time when it was actually in play. We got the call the day we were about to shoot. The only thing I knew about Charlie Rose is that at one point my wife had shot a video that he was in. For an architecture thing, award, I don't know, at the Guggenheim. And I did come home one day and heard a message for her where he was inviting her out to the Hamptons to discuss a directorial project that he was working on.
I wish I could do a Charlie Rose accent so badly.
I do recall him saying,
"Oh man,
Charlie Rose."
This
Charlie
That's
the
Rose.
Way he left the message.
I'd like to cuck your extra on Sex and the City
Hello.
Husband.
Well, I was not married at that time. It was...
girlfriend, whatever.
Fiance.
You'll end up marrying.
I was pretty excited by the whole
How
thing.
How about you ditch the Air America guy and get with an icon of broadcast?
Charlie Rose. That's the way he said his name.
Amazing.
Charlie Rose. And then I was like, I would go. I told her, I said, I would go. To the Hamptons right now.
Demonstrating your
but,
real
apparently
love
the guy that. Was a major league creep. Yeah. And but let's get to the case of John Conyers, more relevant in my mind because he's a lawmaker. He, as you know, is a Michigan Democrat. Is he the longest serving?
I think he's longest serving member of the House right
yes.
now, period. Yeah.
And he's 88 years old. Apparently, there was a 2015 complaint by a female staffer who accused him of sexual harassment and then firing her when she rejected him. The complaint. There is a very arcane and what appears to be, well, not appears to be, is a completely non-transparent process in the House, and I imagine one is similar in the Senate, when women mostly, although I imagine there's some men too, make these complaints, file a complaint. There's no human resources office in Congress. And apparently the case was settled. There was no admission of fault from Conyers. The case involves signed affidavits from Conyers' former staffers who describe a pattern of alleged sexual harassment in Conyers' office over a period of time. Apparently, the woman was paid $27,000 out of his congressional budget, which, of course, is taxpayer money. I think the way they worked it out is that she was paid basically what amounted to a continued salary but did not require her to actually work. I'm not sure how they exactly worked it out. She told BuzzFeed when contacted that she had been blackballed from employment in Conyers circles. And we should also add that BuzzFeed obtained a copy of the complaint from Mike Cernovich. Now, in some ways, I wanted to stop the story before I get to that part, because these are obviously important allegations, and maybe BuzzFeed is working on a story where they're going back, because it would be, it's conceivable, but hard to imagine that Conyers' behavior just started when he was at the young age of 85. One tends to, try this stuff out a little bit earlier than 85. But I wouldn't know necessarily. But my suspicion is that it's not something that you, you wake up at 85 and you're like, it's time.
Well, remember the H.W. Bush defense was, as you age, maybe there are certain things. But yeah.
And that seems to be rolling back, actually, though. There's more and more reports that H.W. Bush was a little bit more spry. Okay.
Something yeah, when okay, you yeah.
But if it's the case,
CIA
look, if it's 40. The case that something mentally went wrong with Conyers in 85, and so he's starting to do this, maybe we should also think about whether or not he's suitable for office. Right. This is, I don't know how you deal with someone who has already sort of been involved in a settlement at work. I don't know, but it is what it is. And I would hope this would be, at the very least, his final term. The interesting thing beyond that is that BuzzFeed got this copy of the complaint from Mike Cernovich, who is the guy who really poisoned the well for Alex Jones having a co-host. Cernovich, I would suspect, got this complaint from a member of Congress or a someone working in a member of Congress's office. And which suggests to me, and the reason why they give it to Cernovich, of course, is because Cernovich is like the one guy on, not the one guy, but one of the people on the right who you could actually have some type of plausible deniability as a congressman that, like, look, he's so far outside of the mainstream Republicans that the Republicans did not release this complaint. The reason why they would do that, of course, is because they don't want all this stuff weaponized. There was millions of dollars, $17 million paid out to settle discrimination suits in Congress. I don't know if this money is an example of that. I don't know if there was a specific fund that was set aside and whether or not that $17 million. Nevertheless, the point being that if that was $27,000, you can do the math on how many of these things have been paid out over the course of 20 years it's been now, 97. Yeah, 20 years, $17 million. There's probably a couple more stories in the House and the Senate. And I imagine we're going to start to see this stuff, and it's going to start being leaked, you know, on the left and on the right. So
who was the dude that was mayor of San Diego a couple years ago?
Oh,
he had
yeah.
a major story, right?
Yes.
What was his name? Do you remember his name?
No.
It was a Democratic congressman who became mayor of San Diego, and he had to resign.
Yes.
Because he was like harassing
I feel like
every single
right.
assault, harassment, like of almost every employee at City Hall, every woman employee at City Hall.
Yeah.
What was it? Bob Filner, right.
Yes.
Right.
So we'll see. But just get ready for this. And I imagine Charlie Rose and Jeffrey Tambor and Glenn Thrush are not the last we're going to see of media ilk.
Rose and O'Reilly start a network?
Yeah, well, very possibly.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on, let's talk about the census pick, which is... I'm really trying to focus my anger.
It's building up in you, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, actually.
It's coming for
us. The Trump administration is leaning toward naming Thomas Brunell, a Texas professor, to the top operational job at the U.S. Census Bureau. He is a professor who's had no government experience. Well, I think briefly limited government experience back maybe a dozen years ago as a liaison working for a congressman for a period of time. He has no experience in running an organization of massive size, of not so massive size, of large size, of moderate size, or small size. He has no organizational experience whatsoever. What he has done is he's testified more than a half a dozen times on behalf of Republicans to redraw congressional districts and is the author of a 2008 book titled, and recall, in 2010, we saw a wholesale successful attempt by Republicans to redistrict across the country in states that they gained control of, such that you can see in Virginia where Democrats outvote Republicans by 9% and draw to a split in the House of Delegates. He wrote a book entitled Redistricting and Representation, Why Competitive Elections Are Bad for America. Recall, it is the census in which is the basis for redistricting. The pick would break with the long-standing precedent. I should just do this. Of choosing a non-political government official as deputy director of the U.S. Census Bureau. This is one of those technical mathy jobs. It has been held by a career civil servant with a background in statistics in the past. It does not require Senate confirmation, so Congress could have no power whatsoever to block it. He is actually the deputy director, or would be, the deputy director of the Census Bureau. He would be the highest-ranking permanent official at the agency because... while the job technically reports to the census director, that slot is being temporarily filled because John Thompson resigned at the end of June, and the administration seems to have no interest in placing a nominee as permanent director in this position. So you see what's going on here. They have a de facto director of the Census Bureau who is actually... the deputy director of the Census Bureau, who does not need Senate confirmation, and they're just not going to put up a director of the Census Bureau because that does need Senate confirmation. there's a lot of issues in terms of what questions you ask and whose responses you're trying to avoid getting from involving the census. But from a sheer qualification standpoint, the New York Times, or the Post, I should say, writes, even a seasoned census hand would be stepping into a difficult job as deputy director now. For the past year, advocates and statistical experts have been warning that the missing top management at the agency and its underfunding by Congress could lead to an inaccurate count in 2020. The agency has delayed its economic census by 6 months due to funding shortages. The test run that they were running for the 2020 census had to cancel components because of limited funding. Brunel appears to have little experience in federal statistics or at managing big organizations. That's basically two for two on what you're looking for. In that 2008 book, he argued that partisan districts packed with like-minded voters, remember, this is what the Republicans did. They shoved Democrats into districts where they would have a 90-10 or an 80-20 majority so that they could make multiple Republican districts around those that district that had a 55-45, let's say, Republican advantage. Go back and listen to our Rat Eft interview with David Dagan.
Daly.
To get more information on that. But this is important because this is the expert who both advised Republicans on how to do this, who testified, well, I'll tell you that in a second. But he wrote this book, Redistricting and Representation, Why Competitive Elections Are Bad for America. Not The Onion. Says that packing like-minded voters actually led to better representation than the ones more evenly split between Democrats and Republicans, because fewer voters in partisan districts cast a vote for a losing candidate. He also,
that's a great fucking point right there.
He also argued, I mean, if you were to carry that to its logical conclusion, right?
I think this is a very appealing model.
Exactly.
Why should I resign?
Or everybody gets their own district.
I know, I feel really good about who reps my district.
Yes, it's me. I did a write-in for myself, and I was running against no one. And there was no one else to vote against me. He's also argued that ideologically packed districts should be called fair districts. It admits that his stance on competitive elections makes him something of an outlier among political scientists.
He's a fucking bold thinker.
Apparently, according to his admission, other political scientists largely support competitive elections.
I love
now,
this guy.
Now, he has criticized partisan gerrymandering in his work. I guess he's more in favor of philosophical gerrymandering.
It's like
that happens to exactly mirror partisan gerrymandering.
Sometimes
like,
it's too much.
I don't know how you square these
well,
two.
Well, sometimes it's too many fucking Molagnons in a district. You got to space it out.
I guess he thinks that people should be gerrymandered based on their issue sets, not on who they vote for.
Oh, yeah. The issue, totally. It's a philosophical thing. It's deeper. You got to look bigger over there, four eyes.
The GOP has repeatedly used his research in redistricting efforts. He has appeared as an expert witness to defend GOP-led states in lawsuits over potential gerrymandering. After the 2010 census, he testified or wrote a report in support of GOP redistricting efforts in Alabama, South Dakota, South Carolina, and New Mexico. In North Carolina, where Republican leaders drew congressional districts that were ultimately overturned by the Supreme Court for, well, racism, but put nicely, unfairly discriminating against black North Carolinians, He wrote a report on behalf of the state analyzing the extent of racially polarized voting in 51 North Carolina districts. In Ohio, so in other words, he was defending North Carolina. In Ohio, he wrote a report in opposition to expanded early voting. Wait till you hear the grounds of this. This is quite something. Arguing that it reduces overall turnout.
Right. He's the only one who I've known. Community cohesion.
Which takes away from Election Day as a civic event.
Boom. It's a big, exciting fucking day, and then people show up early, the whole thing gets ruined. What do you want, Christmas every day of the fucking year? You would, you Jew.
It's like a spoiler alert.
You should be in your own district.
It's like a spoiler alert. It's like as if you were like, oh, I somehow get the Netflix episodes 2 weeks before everybody else, and now when everybody else gets it on that day, it's just not as exciting.
Well, you don't want to binge watch Narcos? What's the matter with you?
I already did! That's the problem!
That's the whole point. You can experience it with everybody else. You lose your civic obligation, you prick.
It sounds like this guy's going amazing. To get... Yeah. Yes.
I want to read some of those one-star reviews.
Yeah, I bet. Let's pop them up and let's do it. Send me an IM right now.
For people
Matt.
Who don't support the civic event.
What was the book called?
Well, it's Why Competitive Elections Are Bad.
By Robert Mugabe and this other dude.
Oh. Let's see what we got here. Well, I think we should probably put on the reading the reviews. Oh, wait a second. I should also tell you.
You're reading the first one?
I'm going to read the first on the back review. If you'll scroll up, please. Matt, in this book, Professor Brunell provocatively challenges conventional thinking about representation and political satisfaction. He convincingly argues that the electoral competition is not, nor perhaps should it be, the hallmark of democracy. Of course, that's from Dennis Hastert, convicted pedophile.
NAMBLA provides some really provocative thinking. Dating young boys if you're a wrestling coach.
Yes, there you go.
Which really re-engages the whole in a free exchange of ideas.
All right, so when let's go.
Dave Rubin?
Yeah, exactly. Here we go. Let's read some of these. Here we go. Oh, these are all coming from today. So that's 21st. Let's do this new one down below. June 6th.
Different take on
competitiveness.
In quotes.
The author of this book has provocative idea. If districts are truly competitive so that they're won very narrowly, then almost half the voters in each district are going to be unhappy. So he advocates making the most of the districts overwhelmingly Republican or Democratic. And there's actually much to recommend this approach. Here we go. Let's go down. A fresh argument from Richard of North Carolina. Brunell made me think for the first time that maybe districts competitive between the parties are a bad idea. An author who makes me rethink my opinion is worth considering. Even more so when my opinion is widely held. I should say this is not a verified purchaser. provocative, but has a fatal flaw. I would summarize the thesis as stating that congressional districts should be as homogenous as possible, so most voters get the representation they want, rather than being outvoted by a slim majority of other voters in their district. This is true as far as it goes, but if the primaries are truly competitive, then we still have almost half the voters feeling they were outvoted during the primary, not during the general election, but if the voters would realize that the primary is where the action is. More importantly, if the attitudes change in the middle of the census decade, say 2015, enough to make 5% of the electorate switch parties from one party to another, the disfavored party should lose by 5% of their seats.
See, this is why white people should be banned from voting, Sam.
Of course. Let's see if we can get one more. Well, this one references the musical Gypsy.
As in, gypsies shouldn't be allowed to vote?
One of the characters sings a song stating that the stripteaser has to have a gimmick. Something to differentiate herself. I don't know, whatever.
All right. People really have too much time on their hands.
Yeah, I would say.
I find that writing an Amazon review or a Yelp review is kind of like a little innately self-canceling.
Mm.
You know? Like, why are you doing that?
I've never felt good about it.
Have you ever written a Yelp review, Maddie?
I think I've written some Amazon reviews.
Maddie?
Food came here too late,
that was weird.
Man. That was it as weird as Waterboat?
No, okay. That was fine.
That was
fine.
So that's Donald Trump's census pick. Let's talk about the FCC for a moment. Today, Ajit Pai is going to announce plans, if he hasn't already, by the time you hear the sound of my voice or by the time I am speaking, because the plan was to do so today. And let me just back up for a moment, just give you some of Ajit Pai's greatest hits in the past couple of days. Literally the past couple of days. The FCC has voted along party lines to reform the low-income lifeline broadband subsidy program. Because there's nothing more annoying than low-income people having access to broadband. Among the most contentious items are a proposal to tighten eligibility requirements and cap spending, another to halt subsidies through internet resellers. The proposal could force over 70% of Lifeline enrollees to seek a new provider. Many would have no option at all. It gives low-income households a $9.25 monthly credit towards discounted home internet service from 900 participating companies. Until last year, that could only be applied to landline and mobile voice service. But former FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler expanded the program to broadband early last year. Pai scrapped the directive that came at the end of Wheeler's tenure that allowed 9 new companies to participate. So a lot of Native Americans apparently will be the first screwed through this thing.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Look at Big Sky. Get
Meanwhile,
off the big screen.
Days ago, the FCC changed their media ownership rules. Broadcasters will be allowed to combine with newspaper in the same market and could be allowed to own up to 2 of the top 4 stations in a city. This is a new rule, which passed in a 3-2 vote. It may be challenged in court, but if they survive, they will mark the most significant changes to media ownership regulations in a generation. FCC is also looking at whether or not to allow Sinclair Media, as we've talked about multiple times on this program, to gain control over 233 stations by merging with Tribune Media. They would give them a reach of 72% of the country. The rule that most people are familiar with is one that limits a single company's reach of media outlets to about 35% of the country. However, they're going to claim that because some of these stations have numbers like 27 or 38 or 56, I'm just naming the UHF numbers that I grew up with, that they're not fully, they should not count as full-size stations. Now, of course, this is ridiculous because the vast majority of people, the overwhelming majority of people in this country get their television via cable. So it doesn't make a difference if it's Channel 4, which was a VHF station, versus Channel 27, which is a UHF station. That was relevant 20 years ago. It is not relevant. And maybe it wasn't even relevant 20 years ago. So that takes us up to this week, where Pai will, the primary thing is, of course, as you remember from the net neutrality fight, initially the internet was considered a Title II classification, which meant that it was a common carrier, which meant that the FCC had the ability, had more jurisdiction to regulate the internet as a common carrier with certain principles, because if it's a common carrier, that means that everybody needs it. Therefore, the FCC has more of an ability to regulate it, which means that the FCC could say to a Comcast, look, you have you provide the cable for Sam Cedar's house, and you also have a music service. You cannot throttle Spotify because you want to promote your music service. In fact, you also can't charge Spotify an increased rate that Spotify is going to have to pass on to Sam Cedar because you own the pipes. That's not appropriate, and that is, it's anti-competitive. It's bad for consumers. It's bad for everybody. Under the Bush administration, Colin Powell's son, who completely, by just sheer coincidence, was appointed to the FCC by George Bush, reversed these classifications, made the internet a Title I classification, and in every attempt after that that the FCC had to regulate the internet, the courts shut down the FCC because... Shut down the FCC because they didn't have the authority anymore. And the courts kept saying to him, look, you can do this if you want to do it. Just revert back to a classification, Title II classification. Well, under Tom Wheeler, as much as he didn't seem to want to, there was an enormous amount of pressure exerted on Wheeler and Barack Obama because Obama had promised net neutrality. There was a tremendous... I think they got over 3 million comments when they were debating this at the FCC. And we won that fight. The internet was classified as a common carrier. Net neutrality rules were put in place. Court cases were resolved. End of story. But not quite. Because Ajit Pai just announced today how the FCC can save the open internet. I'm not going to read it because it's a bunch of lies. It's a bunch of lies. It's a bunch of lies. And it will wipe out net neutrality. Is it reversible? Yes, I guess theoretically we could keep going back and forth. I hope if the Democrats ever take Congress that they just make this a law. I would put that on the list. They're also basically going to dole out some of their authority to the Federal Trade Commission to police whether or not internet service providers are acting in an anti-competitive manner. And of course, then that takes us to antitrust law and interpretation in this country, which since the era of Bork has been largely just a very narrow perspective on price. And I also imagine the FTC is one of those classically underfunded agencies. So net neutrality will be the next on the scrap heap. And then who knows what Ajit Pai will be up to going forward.
Someone called Baked Alaska.
Yeah, exactly.
On the case.
He was super upset about this the other day. Boy, when he finds out about this, he's going to do another like 40-hour In-N-Out Burger video about how upset
Isn't
he is.
Isn't it a little messed up that an Indian guy runs the FCC?
Yeah, right.
That's the angle.
I feel proud of myself about that.
There you go.
Wow. I was holding it back.
Unprompted.
I was trying. It was totally unprompted, totally spontaneous.
Well, since you've got that out,
this is the secret voice in Sam's head.
I don't need a secret voice.
I know. I'm just acting out for the audience so they can literally.
The audience doesn't need a secret voice either. I would imagine. I would
they
hope
know,
certainly
yeah.
By now.
That's true.
I'm
pretty clued in.
So I mentioned briefly the other day that Blue Slips were getting blown up. What are Blue Slips? They were the last opportunity Democrats had to obstruct any of Donald Trump's judicial appointees. fact, the one person who's not returned their blue slip at the moment is Al Franken, who is holding his blue slip for an appeals court nominee, David Strauss, who is an appeals court nominee in Minnesota. He is on Trump's short list for the Supreme Court. Franken's been holding that blue slip. They are taking the opportunity now with this controversy around Franken. Chuck Grassley is basically saying we're not going to honor the blue slip for these. Nine of Obama's judicial picks were denied hearings under the Obama presidency because Chuck Grassley, that same guy, was in the same position, but he honored it for Republicans at that time. Patrick Leahy also honored blue slips back in the day. I hope he's looking in the mirror saying, I should have seen this coming. There's also and understand too that circuit courts are being filled, nominees are being filled at a rate that is unprecedented. Basically because Donald Trump does not seem to care about who gets on that court, and nor does the Trump administration. Trump has nominated 4 out of 58. He's already nominated 58 judges. 4 of them have been deemed unqualified. This is by the ABA, which has been evaluating judicial appointments since the 1950s. From 2006 was the last time the ABA deemed any nominee unqualified. That was Michael Wallace of the Fifth Circuit. In the following 10 years, the committee reviewed more than 600 candidates for the federal judicial posts, all of whom were deemed qualified for the bench. Trump has already nominated 4. These are people who have like no legal background, essentially. Never tried a case. Maybe you've been a lawyer for 2 or 3 years, written blog posts saying that Hillary Clinton has Parkinson's, that type of thing. The Federalist Society apparently has pushed, and this is an interesting dynamic that people should keep an eye on. This is unstoppable. The Republicans are going to fundamentally change the federal judiciary. These are lifetime appointments. It is not possible for this to change short of maybe the Democrats taking the Senate in 2018, which is highly, highly unlikely. Okay? So people on the left who think about courts and understand their importance, and I imagine on the center as well, are realizing that when Democrats get into office, that they're going to have to court pack in some instances. They're going to have to add 2 courts. There'll be people contemplating this. I don't know if they're going to have to, but this is what one of the things that's being contemplated. So it's interesting because the Federalist Society has now offered a plan to Trump that proposes doubling or tripling the number of federal appellate court judgeships so that they can overwhelm the courts as they exist now. Now, this is ironic because you'll recall that the reason why the filibuster for federal judges was done away with by Harry Reid is because the Republicans refused to even consider the nominations of judges to sit on the D.C. Circuit Court, which is the most important court in the nation after the Supreme Court. In fact, and some would argue that in terms of our operations of our governments, because it handles far more cases, it's even more important. Does the EPA have the authority to do this? Does the FCC have the authority to do that? Can government do X? Can this agency do Y? These are all the questions that the D.C. Circuit Court addresses. Republicans had a majority. They refused to fill the court to its normal capacity of 11 judges. I think it was at 8. And because they had like a 5-3, I think it was, maybe I'm getting the numbers wrong, but it's more or less this, advantage. And so Harry Reid ultimately, after I think a year or two, got rid of, maybe it was actually after 4 years, got rid of the filibuster for all judicial appointments short of the Supreme Court. At the time, Republicans were saying 8 is plenty. They don't have enough work to do. There's no reason to give them a full complement of 11.
Yeah, totally.
Now the plan is to double or triple that number there so that, Trump can appoint all of those extra judges. And the memo advises members of Congress to argue that this court packing plan is necessary for politically neutral reasons such as overworked courts. After a section captioned Undoing President Barack Obama's Judicial Legacy. So there is speculation that the reason why the Federalist Society is offering this is so that they can either do it or at the very least get Democrats on record as saying that they that it should not be done, so that they could make this argument later that Democrats said they shouldn't be court packing. It's unclear, but people should keep an eye on this because this would be devastating. And then, of course, if you triple the size of these courts, really hard to make the argument 8 years from now that we should triple the size of the existing courts that are now triple the size of what they were in 2017. So keep an eye on this. I know people think you can just get by on the judiciary because you know the name of one of the Supreme Court justices, but it turns out to be not true. Who knew? Who knew? Maddie?
See, it can work.
Yeah. All right, we're going to head into the...
I'm pretty proud that I voted for a Green New Deal.
There you go.
At least I'm not complicit in murder.
You know, I voted for the candidate who had a Green New Deal, so I feel proud of myself about that.
We are going to take a quick break. Folks, don't forget, it is your membership that makes the show possible. Become a member today. Look, I know that's irrational. I know it's irrational. It is like, I don't know, it's, you know, you take it out on the dog because, you know, you can't do anything about your boss or something. I don't know. But.
Beat your dog because of Trump?
I don't have a dog.
What's the matter with you, Sam?
I don't have a dog.
You need to come with a much better analogy.
I'm working on
your obsession with Jimmy Dore to beating a dog.
I don't think you should say your.
Your profound.
No, 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 no.
Relentless.
I just think your is the wrong. Possessive there.
Oh, fair enough.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Anyways, our. You should come up. Yeah.
I think our.
It's
is
a
probably.
Comedic
In fact,
obsession
I would
for
say,
me and an emotional obsession for you.
I don't think that's accurate either.
Okay. Whatever. All right. Don't obsess about it.
I'm not.
It's all right.
Tonight on TMBS, Adam Proctor on the Marxist strategy for defeating the alt-right and Christopher Ryan, author of Sex at Dawn. Wait a second.
And Tangentially Speaking podcast.
Oh, yeah. I used to listen to that all the time.
Yeah, he's coming on tonight. He's smart. We're talking about hunter-gatherer civilizations and
I used to
what
listen
they teach
to that
us
show.
About cooperative
that guy
evolution.
Didn't know. In fact, I actually did a... I talked about his...
Maybe you could alienate my guest.
I'm going to. Air. I'm going to right now. Oh, wait a second.
Great.
He made a point. I'm trying to think what it was.
Emotional intelligence of yours.
No, I think I talked about this. I think we even did a bit. I mean, this was years ago. I haven't listened to that show in a long, long time. And I'm trying to think in what point he made. He has some pretty regressive ideas when it comes to genders, if I recall correctly. But I can't remember what the,
well,
the
point
totally
is. Totally speculate. And randomly.
All right. Well, I withdraw that.
Without
I
knowing
that.
Who you're talking about.
He had some.
Should definitely do
no,
that.
No, I mean,
the
I
show
listened to his show many, many yeah. times. But, and I talked about it on air. I can't remember exactly.
All kidding is, I honestly don't, I have no memory of that. But
I
it's
mean,
possible.
Most evolutionary psychology is garbage when it comes to gender. But if it can be used to justify socialism, then maybe
and that's
I'll give it a
more
pass.
His art. He's actually a debunker of a lot of those sort of standard narratives of evolutionary biology. It's kind of the point of the book that he wrote with his wife. But anyways, whatever.
Oh, he wrote it for his wife, then forget about it.
With his wife. With his wife.
With his wife. Not oh, for his excuse wife. Me. All right. Well, fair enough. Also, don't forget, it is your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. And do not forget, and this is the last time we're going to be talking to you live before Thanksgiving. So happy Thanksgiving. It is now the holiday season officially, which is why our coupon code for justcoffee.coop is MRHOLIDAY. MR Holiday. And it's justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. You get 30% off. You get free shipping, as always, and 30% off your coffee. I have already purchased 10 pounds of coffee. 10 pounds. I got.
How many do you drink a day?
Huh?
How many cups do you drink
a
day?
Is this a survivalist thing kicking in?
No, it's like I'm getting some at home, I'm getting some for the office. 10 pounds. I got the Colombian and either the Honduran or the Guatemalan. That's what I really realize now. I like that's the kind of coffee I like. All right, folks, going to take a quick break, head into the fun half. Make sure you listen to the program tomorrow and Friday. You will enjoy it. Bye-bye.
C'est une poupée qui fait non. C'est une poupée qui fait non. Toute la journée.